Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're going to look at chapter 7 of the 7th canto. What Prahlad learned in the womb from Narada Muni. So Narada Muni is going to explain to his school friends how it came to be that he got instruction from Narada Muni. Sri Narada Muni said, although Prahlad Maharaj was born in a family of Asuras, he was the greatest of all devotees. Having thus been questioned by his class friends, the sons of the Asuras, he remembered the words spoken to him by me and replied to his friends as follows. And Srila Prabhupada mentions in his purport that progress in spiritual life cannot be obstructed by any material condition. This is called ahoitiki apatiyata. Reception of spiritual knowledge is never checked by any material condition. And thus Prahlad Maharaj from his very childhood spoke spiritual knowledge to his class friends, and certainly it was effective, although all of them were children. So, spiritual knowledge is never checked by any material condition. However, so if one wants to receive spiritual knowledge, then spiritual knowledge cannot be checked. But of course, the process of receiving spiritual knowledge is checked when we're not inclined to hear it. Prahlad Maharaj said, when our father, Hiranyakashipu, went to Mandalachala mountain to execute severe austerities in his absence, the demigods, headed by King Indra, made a severe attempt to subdue all the demons in warfare. Alas, as a serpent is eaten by small ants, so the troublesome Hiranyakashipu, who always inflicted miseries upon all types of people, has now been defeated by the reactions of his own sinful activities. Saying this, the demigods headed by King Indra arranged to fight the demons. When the great leaders of the demons who were being killed one after another saw the unprecedented exertion of the demigods in fighting, they began to flee, scattering themselves in all directions. Simply to protect their lives, they hastily fled from their homes, wives, children, animals, and household paraphernalia. Paying no heed to all of these, the demons simply fled. The victorious demigods plundered the palace of Hiranyakashipu, the king of the demons, and destroyed everything within it. Then Indra, king of heaven, arrested my mother, the queen. As she was being led away, crying in fear like a karari captured by a vulture, the great sage Narada, who at that time had no engagement, appeared on the scene and saw her in that condition. Narada Muni said, O Indra, king of the demigods, this woman is certainly sinless. You should not drag her off in this merciless way. O graciously fortunate one, this chaste woman is the wife of another. You must immediately release her. King Indra said, in the womb of this woman, the wife of the demon Hiranyakashipu, is the seed of that great demon. Therefore, let her remain in our custody until her child is delivered, and then we shall release her. As Prabhupada mentions in the purport, he was thinking the best course was to kill the child when the child was born, and then the woman could be released. Sri Narada Uvacha, Narada Muni replied, the child within this womb, a woman's womb, is faultless and sinless. Indeed, he is a great devotee, a powerful servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, you will not be able to kill him. When the great saint Narada Muni had thus spoken, King Indra, being respectful to Narada's words, immediately released my mother. Because of my being a devotee of the Lord, all the demigods circumambulated her. They then returned to their celestial kingdom. The Prabhupada takes the opportunity to point out that this is called the Parampara system. That although the demigods were exalted personalities themselves, they were obedient to Narada Muni, so obedient that King Indra immediately accepted Narada Muni's words concerning Prahlad. They didn't know themselves, they accepted Narada Muni's statements as authoritative. And then they offer their obeisances to the devotee by circumambulating the woman in whose womb he was living. So this circumambulation is a form of offering respects. So that is the proper process of knowledge. Not to speculate about God and his devotee. One should accept the statements of a bona fide devotee and thus try to understand. The interesting thing is in some temples, I won't mention any in particular, but you know, if a senior devotee mentions that, you know, there's a way of doing something which has been passed down by many other senior devotees in ISKCON, they may not take that. They don't follow the Parampara system. If they disagree, they just reject the senior devotee. In some temples, we see that even to this day. Even though reading the book every day, and still, first time they get instruction, which they don't agree. If they agree with it, they'll follow it. First time they get instruction, they don't agree with it, then they'll just immediately skip the whole Parampara system. We should have a little skit on that one day, you know, ways in which, common ways where you see actually devotees, you know, studying and even preaching about the Parampara, and then senior devotee asks them to do something, and they just argue the point.
Wow, that's intimate.
Yes. This is the Chaitanya, this is Vishvambara Adinarayan. This is a shalagram of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Oh,
yeah.
There you go.
Yesterday we did I did the Abhishek for him. It is a form of a teardrop. The Narayan features because when a shalagram has a chakra at the top, then it is an Orion form, and it's in the egg shape like the universe, so that is an Orion form, but Vishvambara, Chaitanya, because of the teardrop also form, is like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in separation from Krishna. So Vishvambara, the maintainer of the universe, so he's the original Orion, Vishvambara Adi Narayan, as a form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in a mood of separation from Krishna. Wow. Yeah. He only comes out once or twice a year.
Yeah, I haven't seen him before. Yeah.
Yeah. Usually he just comes out once on Gwalpan Neem.
Okay.
But because of the Rath Yatra, he wanted to participate in that. So we went out there today, did a little fire jug out there. Yeah. So, yes. Yes, so it is a very intimate setting here today. So, fix your mind. We have the banks of the Ganges just over one or two streets away. We're in Mayapur Dham. Harinam Kirtans are going on everywhere, all around. We're sitting under a huge neem tree, reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam in the company of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, we're just discussing the parampara system, that, when Narada Muni said to the demigods, don't kill that child, don't obstruct that woman. There's a great devotee in that womb. Now, they had no way of knowing, but the parampara system is what is followed. Oh, here's Narada Muni. He is saying that. So they immediately offered respects to the mother of Prahlad Maharaj as a way of by circumambulating her, and then left the mother and the child in the care of Narada Muni. So it's we were discussing, it's that's actually the proper behaviour of devotees. I've noticed that, there are some who follow it very nicely, and there are many who don't. I noticed that, the things that senior devotees like Ramaswamy, so many, nice devotees, Prabhupada disciples, in the past have instructed me, do things this way, do things that way. This is, and they tell me why, where it come from, Prabhupada said this, Prabhupada said that. And if I say to a devotee the same thing, they'll just admit, if they don't want to do it, if they're doing something their own particular way, they'll just immediately reject it. So the parampara system, it's sort of there, but it's nowhere near as followed as what we used to do. And I notice that practically every day. And of course, there's no use reading these things and then not following. There's no use having a Bhakti Sastri, Bhakti Vaibhava, and not even following. You've got to question, what is the value of those certificates and what are we trying to do? So, it's very easy to just skim over this. Ultimately, we want to follow it again. Prahlad Maharaj continued, the great saint Narada Muni brought my mother to his ashram and assured her of all protection, saying, my dear child, please remain at my ashram until the arrival of your husband. After accepting the instructions of Devarishi Narada, my mother stayed in his care without fear from any direction, as long as my father, the king of the Daitas, had not become free from his severe austerities. So Hiranyakasipu is off performing austerities, and the demigods have taken advantage to kill some of the demons and drive them away. So, my mother, being pregnant, desired the safety of her embryo and desired to give birth after her husband's arrival. Thus she stayed at Narada Muni's ashram, where she rendered service unto Narada Muni with great devotion. Now, here is a very an important purport to this 14th text. One should not remain in a secluded place with a woman, even one's mother, sister, or daughter. So that's quoted from Srimad Bhagavatam 9.19.17. This purport is quoting that. Nonetheless, although one is strictly prohibited from staying with a woman in a secluded place, Narada Muni gave shelter to Prahlad Maharaj's young mother, who rendered service to him with great devotion and faith. Does this mean that Narada Muni transgressed the Vedic injunctions? Certainly he did not. Such injunctions are intended for mundane creatures, but Narada Muni is transcendental to mundane categories. Narada Muni is a great saint and is transcendentally situated. Therefore, although he was a young man, he could give shelter to a young woman and accept her service. Haridas Thakur also spoke with a young woman, a prostitute, in the dead of night, but the woman could not deviate his mind. Instead, she became a Vaishnavi, a pure devotee, by the benediction of Haridas Thakur. Ordinary persons, however, should not imitate such highly elevated devotees. Ordinary persons must strictly observe the rules and regulations by staying aloof from the association of women. No one should imitate Narada Muni or Haridas Thakur. It is said, Vaishnavira Kriya Mudra Viget Na Bujhaya. Even if a man is very advanced in learning, he cannot understand the behaviour of a Vaishnava. Anyone can take shelter of a pure Vaishnava without fear. So both Prahlad Maharaja's mother stayed in the shelter of Narada Muni without fear, and Narada Muni had no fear giving her shelter. Narada Muni, Haridas Thakur, and similar acharyas, especially empowered to broadcast the glories of the Lord, cannot be brought down to the material platform. Therefore, one is strictly forbidden to think that the acharya is an ordinary human being. Gurushu Naramati. So, and so we were discussing that one should follow the parampara system. It means that we accept, we do things as devotees only as we've learned from the higher authorities passed down through the parampara. You know, there's nothing new or inventive. We only do what is passed down. And yet, sometimes the acharyas, especially, even if one is very intelligent, one may not fully understand always. You know, that sometimes they may change the way things have done or make little adjustments. You know, they have the ability to do that. It may appear that those adjustments, that they're almost doing something wrong. But one should be very careful. It's very hard to understand, you know, the very advanced devotees, you know, what is done for preaching, you know. Generally very, you know, successful preachers. It's sometimes hard to understand, you know, some of the concessions that are made. But still, that is not an opportunity to neglect the parampara system. It makes it a little bit more difficult sometimes to put one's faith in the parampara system, but one should maintain one's faith in the parampara system, even though sometimes it's not fully understood. So, you know, ISKCON is facing somewhat of a crisis. in this regard, because you know, we have seen that very elevated devotees, gurus, sannyasis, managers have associated with, you know, young women, and they have fallen down, you know. And, you know, currently, of course, therefore, in ISKCON, you know, it's almost like there's a great cynicism against any sannyasi or anyone wearing saffron or, you know, any authority who may show, you know, in their preaching techniques, you know, they may, you know, preach to, you know, they may have a big followers of women. You know, there are some sannyasis, gurus, who children and women particularly like them more than other sannyasis. You know, there are some sannyasis that women and children in our movement find it hard to relate to at all. They just, you know, and the sannyasi doesn't seem to have any interest in preaching to them. Or they're very harsh or very, you know, offhand, and, you know, it's almost like they don't really care if they never have to preach them at all. So we have to accommodate for the fact that someone is going to preach to, you know, the women and the children, and quite often, you know, they may be sannyasis and you know, leaders. So therefore, we have to, and if they're advanced and they are doing nicely, we should be very careful not to criticise them. So the danger is to just lump everyone in who's, you know, as if, you know, any adjustment of the restrictions in, you know, how, you know, a leading preacher associates with children and women, if they're capable, we have to understand. And at the same time, you know, the movement is being very watchful, you see. So it's actually, you know, from what I've seen, you know, there are some very nice preachers who are being unfairly targeted because people cannot understand Vaishnavera Kriya Navigya Mudhaya. They actually can't understand, you know, their situation and their preaching abilities. And then, of course, you know, on the other hand, we do have to be very careful as a movement that we have seen, you know, sannyasis fall down. So both have to be there. But from what I've seen and heard from, you know, very senior devotees and talking about what goes on in different parts of the world, it's almost like there's a knee-jerk overreaction to some nice preachers in our movement in a very harsh and, you know, hurtful way. So, you know, it's a very interesting purport here, you know, that's at the moment playing out in a bit of a disastrous way in ISKCON. So we really have to understand these books, you know, that in these purports there is leeway for advanced devotees in their preaching that some of the rules and regulations may not apply. You know, I remember when I was really ill, when I had that meningitis, and I spent the entire time, I couldn't do anything, couldn't even feed myself. So my wife laid me down on the couch and she just put the Prabhupada DVDs on. She knew I'd watch it, and I just watched them day and night. And, but Prabhupada was with, and those videos where they explained what's happening. So Prabhupada was in India somewhere, and one of his disciples, you know, a young girl, you know, so she's 20-something. You know, Prabhupada understood she'd learnt the Ishvapanishad off by heart, the whole thing. And so when they were doing some ceremony, he asked her to recite that, and she sat there and recited that whole. And he was so happy with her, he placed her head on his lap and patted her on the back and on the head, you know, brushing her hair like that. See? Now anyone watching that would think, he's a sannyasi, he's placed a 20-year-old girl's head on his, but you know, anyone can see he's like a grandfather, he's completely transcendental. But it is possible that he could be criticized severely for that. In fact, his godbrothers do, you know. Now, no one can imitate Prabhupada, no one can imitate Haridas Thakur, no one should imitate Narada Muni. But it does show that there is leeway for those on the transcendental platform, that within ISKCON, that sometimes these things are have to be understood, that yes, if someone is actually on a very transcendental platform, sometimes what they do in the course of preaching, it doesn't affect them, it doesn't affect the person. You know, that disciple of Prabhupada is certainly fearless. You know, there's nothing, no harm going to come to me, there's no material thoughts going to come. She'll, you know, that'll take her back to Godhead. Day Prabhupada patted her on the head like a little baby and all that, you know. She's fearless and Prabhupada's fearless. He's got nothing to worry about. He's just so happy she's chanting, you know, she's preached in front of everyone. Made a guru proud. So we have to understand that there's some leeway. We have to be very careful just to sort of launch it. Oh, it says here, you know, it says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, 9:19:17, that you can't be in the same secluded place with even your mother, your sister, your daughter. I've saw you. You're a rascal. You should be, you know, removed from your office, your position, things like that. You say, and that is some very senior, you know, capable devotees are getting that sort of reaction from people. So. It all comes back to a proper understanding of what's in Prabhupada's books and Prabhupada's examples. Not quoting things out of context without having read all of Prabhupada's books properly. You know, one of the main things, if someone says, you know, at the end we say, you know, last year we did, you know, what is the benefit of being a bhakti vaibhavi? At the end of being bhakti vedanta, you know, one of the things that everyone should be able to say is that, yes, having read all of Prabhupada's books systematically from start to end is very helpful to put things in their context like that and to get a proper, ability to understand and present the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So we were just finishing off on a point where we're discussing how in chapter 7, verse number 14, that one should not be in the association of even one's sister, mother. Or daughter, one is prohibited from doing that because one can become materially contaminated. And yet Narada Muni did exactly that. He took this Prahlad Maharaj's young mother to his ashram and lived with her in a secluded place and accepted service from her, which is even worse. So we're discussing that, and then I was discussing that, you know, there are, so certainly, because senior devotees have fallen down, you know, by that we have to be very careful, and at the same time, in ISKCON currently, in my discussions with, you know, different senior devotees, there is a, you know, a knee-jerk backlash, which is improper against actual good preachers, qualified preachers, who sometimes make adjustments and are a little bit more, you know, closely associated with the women and children who they're preaching to, and they're being lumped into some sort of, you know, scoundrels and what have you, you know. So we sort of have to see both sides and understand that within our movement. And then I explained the example of when Prabhupada was preaching in India, and one of his disciples chanted the whole Ishopanishad by heart as a preaching exercise in one of the ceremonies. And Prabhupada, it's on the video, you know, you see, and Prabhupada, so happy, he sort of put his arm over his shoulder, put a head on his lap. Have you seen that? Just patted on the head and the back like that, you know. So, you know, it shows that, you know, it can be there in ISKCON. We're not to imitate Prabhupada, but still, there are devotees who are capable of preaching to men, to women and children in a closer way than other sannyasis and other leaders. And we have to learn to distinguish as a movement. Here is a very solid preacher. This one maybe, you know, you know, might be taking a chance, you know. Be very careful to imitate advanced devotees. It's very dangerous. But it's also just as dangerous to misunderstand a very advanced devotee and to be very critical of their proper preaching habits. That's also just as dangerous. And we got onto that. And, of course, the first point we discussed was the parampara, where sometimes, therefore, following the parampara can be a little confusing because we may not understand the senior devotees who do things in the name of preaching. And we may think, oh, you know, gee, that's bending the rules a bit. So, you know, it's not so easy. And my observation is that these simple statements of following the parampara has become a much more confused issue. Now, despite the fact we have disciples course, Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Bhava, and all these different things, my observation is that there are some devotees who nicely follow the parampara, but there seems to be a lot more confusion than what we previously had in a movement as to how to, you know, follow the instructions of senior devotees and how to recognise, you know, the different senior devotees. And it seems to be a very confused issue. And the result is that from what I see, what has crept into our movement a lot more than previously is a lot more people will just do things their own way. And they really don't care whether there's a senior devotee present or not. They're just going to do it their own way. And that's what it comes down to. So. But we don't want that in our movement, do we? Do we? Hands up, everyone who wants that in the movement. No? No one. Good. All right. We don't want that. You know, we don't want that to increase. It is increasing, but we don't want it to increase. But I see it increasing. Sorry, what were you going to say, Nima?
They are, like, as you were mentioning, that some devotees, senior devotees, have fallen down.
Mm-hmm.
And when the close devotees are associated, why didn't you tell us? I mean, same reason. They feel that, okay, maybe he's a senior devotee, he knows what he's doing. And so we have not told about it. I mean, that also we get.
Well, if a senior devotee falls down, then they obviously...
No, no. They're seeing that, okay, that, like, for example, he's associating with the same, in a closed environment.
Yeah, too.
And then at that time they said, I mean, he has already fallen down. And then that question, why haven't you told us about this earlier? Why have you allowed it to... They said, because he's a senior devotee, we thought everything he's, what he's doing is fine.
Mm.
So there is...
Yeah, that's right. So
it's a,
there's a confusion that devotees, this is why we're studying this, we actually have to learn properly how to recognise devotees, even very senior, who may be capable of not quite proper behaviour. Or who may being at the position of a very advanced devotee, but they're actually capable of being, you know, corrupted by circumstances or some of the things that they're doing. And then we also have to see that within our movement, we have devotees of a very high standard who, you know, can, you know, preach and do things which, you know, others shouldn't do because it's dangerous for us. But they can do it without it, and it doesn't affect them. We have to be able to recognize we do have devotees in our movement of a very, you know, very elevated standard. So there is a lot of confusion, and that is my point. That
are we capable of discriminating that? We may not be having that capability of discriminating.
We might know, but you would expect that the authorities that we are all dealing with help us.
Yeah, that's the expectation. Sometimes it doesn't happen.
Ideally, yes.
ideally.
Yeah.
Ideally, yes.
So now, for instance, the proper behavior. So, you know, yesterday we did an abhishek. I saw Pratapana and his wife, Sri, was Pratapana's wife? Yeah. Very advanced devotees, very nice preachers, very expert. I invited them up to do the abhishek. I want the devotees to appreciate. I want the devotees to see. I'm inviting them up. You should know these are advanced devotees. I want to bring that to the attention of everyone here. That was my purpose. Don't just let them merge in amongst the crowd and no one even tells you. You must know that these are very senior advanced devotees. So that's why I did it. And that is proper behavior, that if, you know, senior devotees come into our community, then as we see from, you know, when Sudha Goswami come into the presence or Sukadeva, you know, the most senior persons, it's their duty to, you know, praise them and, you know, allow others, you know, those who are capable of praising or to, you know, giving them proper recognition. And others, you know, it gives others to understand. Oh, yes. So, you know, here is Sudha Goswami. Oh, we could have just thought he's one of the yogis. He's not. You know, here is Vyas, like this. So, you know, here is Balaram, you know. Romaha Shan's on the asana, and Balaram comes. You know, it's your duty. You know, it's not an ordinary thing, and, you know, certain persons come in. So, you know, that he was killed for not bringing it to, you know, to the attention of, you know, not paying attention himself and bringing it to the attention of others. If the senior devotees in an attempt to just always be the most senior person and purposely not wanting others to get attention, it's bad behaviour. And that creates a problem in the movement. It actually creates a problem. You know, they actually have to, they're supposed to go out of their way. And, you know, if senior devotees, you know, come into circumstances of preaching, the new devotees, what have you, there should be an introduction. Oh, here is so-and-so, you know. So-and-so has actually been a devotee for some years, and, you know, here is Chiranjeev, you know, just, you know, and you know, this one and that one, like that. Here is Korma, you know, and you know, here is this one. If that's not done, it's almost like you give a little nod. You're the most senior person there. You just give them a little nod, and you don't actually. There's nothing in the whole thing. Then that's actually wrong. It's not proper, and it creates a problem in our movement. And the problem is that the general devotees can't, you know, they may not have the ability to distinguish. That's natural. So someone helps them, you know. So, you know, I mean, these things are all there in the Bhagavatam. And so what I'm saying is, you know, because that doesn't go on so much at all these days, then it's difficult for people to accept the parampara system, that I have faith in this one, because they can't distinguish, and sometimes they lump everyone in as, you know, a problem, or, you know, everyone's just part of the general populace, you know. So therefore, you know, following the parampara is not made easy for them. We're teaching them to follow the parampara, but we're not pointing out, parampara means generally, you know, we don't do anything. Parampara means this. Actually, devotee won't do anything, they won't say anything until it's authorised from parampara. That's actually what parampara means. Doesn't mean that, okay, if someone comes along and they ask me to do something, I'll do it. Otherwise, in the meantime, I'll just wing it. What are you doing? You know, wing it. What are you saying? You know, you're just making it up, or, you know, what are you doing? You know, parampara means you don't do anything unless you know that what you're doing has been authorised from higher authorities. So then the question is, to have faith in the higher authorities, who are the higher authorities? And, you know, to do that. Otherwise, you know, how will, you know, it's just lip service. So, so very, very important purport there, you know, showing both sides. You know, there's ordinary persons strictly observing rules and regulations, and then you've got very advanced devotees, you know, solid preachers, fixed up, staunch, and they don't have to behave in the same way. And it's very hard to understand even the most intelligent person. Even devotees, people following devotional service, may find it very difficult to actually understand what that, you know, preaching Vaishnava is doing, why they did that. So, Narada Muni delivered his instructions both to me, who was within the womb, and to my mother, who was engaged in rendering him service. Because he is naturally extremely kind to the fallen souls, being in a transcendental position, he gave instructions on religion and transcendental knowledge. These instructions were free from all material contamination. So Prabhupada mentions in this purport, Dharma Satatvam Gyanam Cha, etc. Nirmalam. We have a Nirmalam, in our midst. So, spotless. Nirmalam refers to spotless dharma, spotless religion, or in other words, Bhagavad Dharma. So we have Nirmala Krishna. Krishna is spotless, and his the knowledge coming from Krishna is also spotless. Nirmalam. Nirmalam Krishna. And one who follows that the Nirmala Krishna and his Nirmala Bhagavad Dharma, they also become Nirmala, spotless. So, in this chapter we'll see how Prahlad, he's of course addressing the children of demons, who have been taught to follow materialistic religion. So therefore, he's making a distinction. I've heard something else, something which is not materialistic, something which is spotless. So this is the context. It's not what you've heard. It's going to be something different. And what is that? It's pure religion consists of understanding one's relationship with God and acting accordingly, thus filling the highest mission of life and returning home back to Godhead. And we see that Prahlad Maharaj will say that, you know, accept this path from the very beginning of life, this pure, uncontaminated religion. And where does Krishna speak this same uncontaminated religion? Bhagavad Gita 18:66, Sarvadhammam Parityagyam Mamekam Saranam Vraja. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. So this is Bhagavad Dham, and Srila Prabhupada says Bhagavad Dham means Bhakti Yoga. And so if we say Bhagavad Dham, we're talking about Bhakti Yoga, pure devotional service. It's the same thing. And, you know, we have heard previously that that instruction by Krishna, when a person accepts what Krishna says, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he's saying to me, surrender unto him and give up all other religions. If a person says, I think that is true, I think that is correct, I think that sounds like real religion, that is called Shraddha, and that is the beginning of Bhakti. That is the very beginning of Bhakti. From there, and then from that point, you know, by following the Srimad Bhagavatam, the science of Bhakti is given. And Prabhupada quotes also the verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 1:27 that Vasudeva Bhagavati, by rendering devotional service unto the Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. Prabhupada says, to be situated on the platform of pure religion, one should perform bhakti yoga in relationship with Krishna Vasudeva. Now that that series of verses, as you know, Srimad Bhagavatam, sort of Prabhupada quoting 1:27. Yeah, that's a very important chapter, and Bhakti begins with hearing. So, text number 16. Because of the long duration of time that has passed, and because of her being a woman, therefore less intelligent, my mother has forgotten all these instructions, but the great sage Narada blessed me, and therefore I could not forget them. So in this chapter, so that verse that Prabhupada has quoted, that by bhakti, one will get the transcendental knowledge and detachment from the world. It's a very important verse because in this chapter, there is, Prahlad is trying to help his school friends to first, he's going to give them some transcendental knowledge, and they have to apply their intelligence to understand that. And if they do apply their intelligence to understand that, then they may begin to have, you know, a devotional attitude or even devotional service to the Personality of Godhead, by which their transcendental knowledge becomes full and complete, and their detachment becomes full and complete. Other processes of detachment or knowledge can lead one to the point of bhakti, but doesn't guarantee that one will take it. But bhakti actually gives everything that the previous processes give, and also the opportunity to engage in bhakti itself, which is, so it's quite an important verse. You'll see as this chapter goes on. So, now, Prahlad, we were saying in the beginning, Prahlad heard the knowledge in the womb. And we and Prabhupada mentioned in the purpose that receiving transcendental knowledge cannot be obstructed. So Prahlad heard it in the womb, and there was no obstruction. He was a little baby in the womb, and yet it was obstructed with his mother. So it can't be. So we have to understand. So obviously, it can be obstructed. You know, if the person doesn't sort of take it on board, like that. So he says. Now, Prabhupada quotes this verse again. The same mood that the lowborn, and apart from that, you know, then you have women, Vaishyas, Sudras, can approach the supreme destination. So Prabhupada says, Papa Yoni refers to those who are less than Sudras, but even though a woman may not be Papa Yoni because of being, not Papa Yoni, not lowborn, you know, or, you know, suffering significant sinful reactions, nonetheless, as a woman, she may sometimes forget devotional instructions. For those who are strong enough, however, there is no question of forgetting. Women are generally attached to material enjoyment, and because of this tendency, they forget devotional instructions. But even if a woman practices devotional service strictly, according to the rules and regulations, the statement by the Lord himself that she can return to Godhead is not at all astonishing. One must take shelter of the Lord and rigidly follow the rules and regulations. Then, regardless of what one is, one will return home back to Godhead. Prahlad Maharaj's mother was more concerned with protecting the child in the womb and was very anxious to see her husband return. Therefore, she could not consider very seriously the sublime instructions of Narada Muni. She was distracted. So it was obstructed. There was nothing. If she wanted to accept it, she could. So, you know, that process of receiving transcendental knowledge could not be obstructed if she's a woman or a child or anything. But it was obstructed because she was distracted. She obstructed herself, just not paying attention. I was doing the jagya today for the Ratha Yatra, the fire. And so, you know, the few of the men who and the ladies who were helping, I said, you know, ask who's chanting 16 rounds, and some put their hands up. I said, well, they can put a banana in, and you know, perhaps their children, you know, can put a banana in, not others, because I have to accept, you know, there's just people coming out of nowhere, and I have to accept their karma. So, you know, they sort of all nodded their head, and then one of them just starts picking up a whole bunch of bananas and just distributing them to, you know, anyone. I'm thinking, you didn't hear a word. You stood there nodding, and you didn't hear a word I said, you know. So, you stood there. Actually, it happened a few times today. I sort of say something. But, so it was actually obstructed. Because there was some, where his mind was, I have no idea. But he was nodding, looking directly in the eyes. And he goes to the bar and just starts distributing, you know. So, you know, her mother was obviously a bit in that state, you know. Yeah. You know, that's a big thing. You know, and I even told the story. I actually told a story about my spiritual master that when he does initiation ceremonies, he doesn't let anyone put grains or what have you if he can help it, except the initiates, for fear of the karma that he has to accept. You know, the reality of the situation. You know, as we get to the eighth canto, Prabhupada mentions it in the. Srimad Bhagavatam. So, you know, it's a very significant thing. And someone was telling me the other day that about Jaipur Thakur Maharaj, that he went to see, maybe it was an astrologer or someone who reads something, their past life or something.
20 years has been reduced.
20 years of his life has been reduced because of the amount of disciples he has accepted. Then for that, 20 years that he would have lived is now gone, been taken. I mean, you know, he does that, you know.
But I said, I don't mind about that, but at least let them chant properly.
Let them chant, yeah, that's right.
My religious
yeah. But, and he is a very, you know, powerful devotee and authorized by Prabhupada to accept, you know, so many disciples. Does anyone know how many disciples he's got? I think he was authorized to accept 10,000.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I'd imagine he'd have 10,000. Because I think my spiritual master said he had something like about 5,000. He told me that. You know why he told me? He said I was in the top 10. I was pretty happy with that. So, So, Prahlad Maharaj continued, my dear friends, if you can place your faith in my words, simply by that faith you can also understand transcendental knowledge just like me, although you are small children. Similarly, a woman can also understand transcendental knowledge and know what is spirit and what is matter. So, you know, Krishna clearly says that anyone can accept transcendental knowledge. But, you know, it is obvious that brahmanas tend to train their mind not to be distracted from the bodily platform of life, isn't it? You know, that's the whole training of a brahmana, is to control the mind and senses. That's what it mentions there, the qualities. Anyone whose, you know, life is not as dedicated to controlling the mind and senses, to that degree, they're going to be not focused, and to that degree, they're not going to properly take on board the transcendental knowledge or have faith in it. So it's not a biased statement, you know. There's a, those in the mode of passion will be distracted, and those in the mode of tamas will be more distracted. And those lower than that will be more distracted. So it's not a, you know, it's a scientific understanding. That the mind and the senses are less controlled. Actually, in one purport, Prabhupada mentions how these modes of particular nature, you know, in other words, the Brahman is closer to the spiritual platform. That means they're less distracted by the whole material condition altogether. And the further you go down Raja's tamas, it means you're, you know, more immersed and covered on the material platform. Your spiritual covering is more complete. So, therefore, we can understand that, just to even things up a little bit, if, you know, a woman has been trained to control the mind and senses and not be distracted by the material circumstances, these verses are not referring to her bodily condition, but, you know, it's a conditioned state that a person has transcended. And if a man has not been trained to control their mind and senses and thus keep their focus on the spiritual platform, who is better situated? You know? So you can get women who are not even initiated, who are nice devotees and focused, and you can get brahmanas who do all sorts of silly things. I told the story about, I was doing an abhishek a year or two ago, and Bhaktiman had gone away. So a devotee, godbrother of mine, makes these juices every year, decided, well, I haven't been given the instruction to make juices, so I'm not going to make them this year. Or I'm going to ask, should I? So there were no juices. So anyway, I thought, well, Krishna shouldn't miss out. So, you know, I have seen a senior godbrother of mine who does deity worship. You can place a banana in a loader and you get the banana sent away. So I did that. So I was passing that to a devotee who was a Brahmin who was about to do the Abhishek. And, you know, I thought I'd better tell them because, you know, they'll probably drop the banana on Shalagram's head in the Shringa. And I said, you know, hang on to the banana. So, what do you think he did? He dropped the banana, he tipped it upside down, banana, bang, onto the Shalagram, dropped it on his head. I'm thinking, you know, are you even thinking at all about what you're doing? You know, like where is your mind? You know, how could you do that? You know, in front of everyone, in front of, you know, are you even thinking, you know, where is your focus? So, and then you can get some women who are not even initiated, would never do something like that, you know, just focus. So, you know, we have to understand the, you know, these are not like fixed in concrete, these, you know, we have to learn to perceive a person, how they've elevated above their birth situation by devotional service and treat them accordingly.
It's also a warning to us.
What's that?
It's a warning to us how we can get caught up.
Yes.
And lose an opportunity.
By becoming distracted, yeah. Yes, on the
body. Day-to-day and thinking about our anxieties.
So many things.
We can just lose the main.
Yes, that's right. So, and now, so Prahlad Maharaj, and he's saying, if you can place your faith in my word, so again, he's coming back, you know, this is coming from Narada Muni, so there's a parampara, it worked for me, it worked for you, we're coming back to that point, and Prabhupada says here that, these evading instructions, one must have faith. Well, let's see. I'll go back to the beginning of the purport. That he quotes this verse. Now, I remember, you know, one time Prabhupada said, he asked one of his disciples, what's the most important verse in all the Vedic scriptures? And they quoted so many. And this is the one, he said. Yaja deve para bhakti yata deve tata guru tachaiti katita hyata pakashante mahatmanaha. Unto those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master, all the imports of Vedic knowledge are automatically revealed. Here's the converse. If you don't do that, we quote Bhaktivinoda Sindhu, Ataku Shri Krishna Namadi, Nabhavegraham Indriya, Shevan Mukhi Hijivido Swayam Ivas Pratyada. No one can understand Krishna as he is by the blunt material senses, but he reveals himself to the devotees, being pleased with them for their transcendental loving service unto him. And then again, quoting Bhagavad Gita 18:55, that only by one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead as he is, only by devotional service. And when one is in full consciousness of the Supreme Lord by such devotion, he can enter into the kingdom of God. So, what can be understood from the Vedas? Especially this point, which just makes the difference between taking up bhakti and not taking up bhakti. And that's a crucial thing to happen or not to happen. If one doesn't take up bhakti, all of their Vedic following is almost useless until they do. And if one takes up bhakti, even if they're not following other Vedic injunctions, they're still perfectly situated. So it says that with faith in the spiritual master and the person of Godhead, then real knowledge of the Atma and Paramatma and the distinction between matter and spirit will be automatically revealed. That when that is understood, even intellectually, as we said, even intellectually, because Prahlad will try and explain it to them in a reasonable way. a logical way, because they're not necessarily bhaktas. So he's going to have to approach them in a very logical, reasonable way, so that they'll say, they get to the point where they say that sounds reasonable, and if I apply myself to the process, then that full knowledge will come to me properly. But at least they'll have the understanding to say, you know, or the Shraddha, the faith that, okay, that's what I should be doing. That intelligence must be there, you know, when these things are understood. This Atma-tattva, or spiritual knowledge, will be revealed within the core of a devotee's heart because of his having taken shelter of the lotus feet of a Mahajan, such as Prahlad Maharaj. Buyat, let there be. I'm going to use that. I like that. Buyat. So people say Buya, Buya. Well, I don't even know what that means. You know, people, what does that mean? It's a saying you hear in the West. You ever heard that?
No.
Something happens, they go Buya. But actually, Buya means, you know, let it be. So be it. Mm-hmm. You know, Pandit, please bless me that I can, you know, become a nice devotee. Buya. Let it be. Let it be. I always wondered, what, you know, what to say. There it is. just like, you know, one time, people ask for a blessing, and you sometimes don't know what to say. And I heard my spiritual master saying, you know, he repeated what Lord Chaitanya said. Yes, I bless you. May Krishna be pleased with you. You know, may you be a nice devotee of Krishna. You know, may you make progress in Krishna consciousness. You know, that's the sort of blessing that we're supposed to give. No, if, you know, if they say, oh, look, you know, may my house be built very quickly without obstructions.
That's what they would prefer, yeah.
No, but you say, yes, may Krishna be pleased with you. So they think, oh, yes, he's, you know, if Krishna is pleased, my house will go up. But we're just saying, may Krishna please, everything will happen. You'll get the luck, but you'll get the works. They're usually happy with that when you say it. So Prabhupada says, a devotee of the Lord desires for everyone to take Krishna consciousness. Unfortunately, however, people sometimes do not have staunch faith in the words of the spiritual master, who comes in the disciplic succession, and therefore they're unable to understand transcendental knowledge. The spiritual master must be in the line of authorized disciplic succession. Like Prahlad Maharaj, receiving knowledge from Narada. Now, the words Vaisharadi D refer to intelligence concerning the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is extremely expert. So, keep these two concepts in mind. We're saying that someone can understand something if they get the blessings of the devotee of the Lord, the authorized devotee, and Krishna. Does that mean that we don't have to appeal to their intelligence? If we say, you know, so therefore our preaching, you know, tactic would be, I'm not going to discuss with you about creation and the difference between matter. May Krishna bless you. May Krishna bless you. I'm not going to teach him that you're not the body, you know. So obviously we also, before they take the devotional service, we have to encourage their intelligence to apply themselves to the question, should I take to devotional service? So they may not fully understand that they're not this body, but their intelligence says there's something reasonable that I should, you know, try and understand properly. It sounds reasonable, I don't fully understand it, but, you know, I don't fully understand, you know, the super soul. thing, but it seems to answer a lot of questions. So, you know, so we've encouraged the intelligence to accept it as a reasonable proposition for research, which is only then understood by bhakti properly, by engagement bhakti. And study. So we do have to stimulate their intelligence still. So the word viśāra dhī refers to the intelligence concerning the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is extremely expert. The Lord has created wonderful universes by his expert knowledge. Unless one is extremely expert, he cannot understand the expert management of the supreme expert. One can understand, however, if one is fortunate enough to meet a bona fide spiritual master. And then he mentions the leaders of the four sampradayas. Srila Prabhupada says very clearly in this purport, if one does not take to the path of disciplic succession, it is not possible for one to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one understands the Supreme Lord through devotional service with faith, so through devotional service, in disciplic succession, and then advances further, he awakens his natural love for God, and then his life, his success in life is assured. So here, this is the preaching technique of Prahlad Maharaj, which we're still following today. All the preachers of Krishna consciousness follow this, these arguments, this preaching technique, and these very classical verses to this very day. And this is where, you know, he begins, you know, his preaching techniques. And bear in mind that in our preaching, perhaps we may be preaching to persons who they may not necessarily come to the platform of devotional service straight away, but they may be wanting liberation. You know, they may be following a path of jnana, yoga, you know, which is something. They're following some path of yoga as a jnana yogi and karma yogi, and they're wanting liberation and things like that. And therefore, this preaching also benefits them. So it's not as if someone's not going to be a devotee, we have nothing to say to them. Because the same teaching that Prahlad is giving will benefit them. And by the same teaching, if they just go a step further, they'll also come to bhakti. But if they don't, they're still going to... They're still heading in the way of bhakti, and heading towards a sinless life and a liberated platform to some degree. So, text number 18. Just as the fruits and flowers of a tree in due course of time undergo six changes, birth, existence, growth, transformation, dwindling and then death, the material body, which is obtained by the spirit soul under different circumstances, undergoes similar changes. However, there are no such changes for the spirit soul. So, Srila Prabhupada says, this is a very important verse in understanding the difference between the spirit soul and the material body. He quotes Bhagavad Gita 2:20, that the soul is eternal, it's not subject to birth and death, etc. So, the example of a tree is given. A tree has its fruits and flowers, and the tree stands for many years, but as the seasons changes, its fruits and flowers undergo six transformations. So he comes back to that point that the fruits and the flowers of the tree seasonally come and go, but the tree continues to stand. Similarly, the transmigrating soul accepts various bodies which undergo transformation. So it's almost like the soul is being compared to the tree and the body is the fruits of the transformation resting on the foundation of the soul, which is permanent. So the soul remains, the bodies come and go. The soul is eternal and ever existing, but the bodies accepted by the soul are changing. Now, Srila Prabhupada also, in this purport, therefore challenges the scientific conception that life is produced by chemicals. You mix the chemicals of the ovum and the semen, and you're supposed to get life. But unless the soul actually enters the mixture, there is no possibility of pregnancy. As soon as the soul enters, as soon as life enters that body, then it will grow, take birth and transform and everything like that. Now, it's an interesting section here because Prabhupada is now going to discuss the two types of soul. In one sense, you can take this verse as some acharyas do, such as Vishwanath Chakrabarti, the core, that actually Prahlad Maharaj is talking about the super soul. So, if you look at there, Prabhupada's applying this to the soul, and if you look at some of the acharyas that I mentioned, the soul, the stage at all, they're actually saying that this applies to the super soul, in which case the universes, and all the bodies within that, are the changing. Represent the changing fruits, and it's the super soul. So as we go through this, but there's no contradiction because, as mentioned in this section, the soul and the super soul are one in quality. The soul is part of the super soul. So therefore, there are qualities that, so if you're talking about that's the quality of the super soul, it's a correct statement. If you're talking about it's the quality of the soul, it's a correct statement. They are one in quality, but the soul is part. So quantitatively, there's a difference. So Prabhupada then explains about the super soul. So he says, as various bodily changes take place in the individual soul, different millenniums of creation take place in the supreme soul. He says, since the body is the external feature of the soul is not dependent on the body. Rather, the body is dependent on the soul. One who understands this truth should not be very much anxious about maintenance of the body. There is no possibility of maintaining the body permanently or eternally. And further down he says, Nicho Nichanam Chaitanas Chaitanam Chaitanam. Lord Vishnu is the chief living being, whereas the individual living entities are parts of Lord Vishnu. All various grades of bodies, from the gigantic universal body to the small body of an ant, are perishable, but the super soul and the soul, being equal in quality, both exist eternally. This is further explained in the next verses.
So we say that the size of the soul is 1/10,000th the tip of the hair.
Yes.
That is for the jiva soul.
That's right.
What about the paramatma soul, or what about the...
Yeah, the jiva is anu, infinitesimal, and the super soul is vibhu, unlimited.
So there is no size mentioned of the...
Unlimited.
Didn't you say it's the size of the thumb somewhere? Super soul is the size of the thumb.
Yes, but he's within every atom and within every living entity's heart. But it's not a material size. It's not a material size because, you know, being thumb size and the size of an ant, you know, and being thumb size and the ant, the heart of an elephant, so it's not a material size, or a Timangilla fish, or, you know, one of those eagles that fly from planet to planet eating elephants. His thumb size in their heart as well. So, and as big as a living entity can be, he can be that, you know, thumb size. But so it's not a material thumb size. He's vibhu. He can be as big as he want, and yet for the benefit of the soul, just remain hidden in the heart in a thumb size position. So he can be smaller than the smallest and bigger than the biggest. So, you know, Vishnu can be as small as he wants to be, and he can be as big as he wants to be. That's called unlimited. You cannot limit. There's no point at which, you know, that's too big. He can never get that big, or he can never get that. That's unlimited. That's vibhu. So that thumb-sized nature of Vishnu can be as big as he wants, the bigger the thumb you can imagine. And that thumb-sized Vishnu can be as small as the thumb you can imagine. Okay, now this next verse. Then we get, again, we can look at verses, you know, so verses 19 to 20. Srila Prabhupada says, he translates, Atma refers to the Supreme Lord, all the living entities. Both of them are spiritual, free, and there are, how many, I think 10 or 12 qualities listed here. Both are spiritual, free from birth and death, free from deterioration and from material contamination, individual, they are knowers of the external body, and they are the foundation and shelter of everything. They are free from material change, they are self-illuminated, they are the cause of all causes, and they are all-pervading. They have nothing to do with the material body, and therefore they are always uncovered with these transcendental qualities. One who is actually learned must give up the illusory conception of life in which one thinks, I am this mature body and everything in relationship with this body is mind. So, Prahlad Maharaj is giving these materialistic school friends something to meditate upon with faith in the words of Narada Muni and Prahlad, and as they apply themselves to that, then their intelligence will become more and more purified. Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport that, you know, the living entities have the same qualities as the Lord, just as a drop of seawater is composed of the same chemicals as the great sea itself. Thus, there is oneness in quality, but a difference in quantity. And of course, because of the quantitative difference of the sea does have other qualities, therefore, that are not quite existing within the drop. So just very quickly, so Srila Prabhupada mentions that, you know, this Avishuddha Buddhaya, that persons with a small fund of intelligence, finding themselves equal in quality with God, foolishly think that they are equal in quantity also. When such persons, after endeavouring hard for many, many lives to understand the Supreme Cause, are finally in actual knowledge of Krishna Vasudeva, they surrender unto him. Thus they become Mahatmas, or perfect souls. If one is fortunate enough to understand his relationship with God, knowing that God is great, Vibhu, whereas the living entity is small, Anu, he is perfect in knowledge. The individual exists in darkness when he thinks that he is the material body and that everything in relationship with the material body belongs to him. This is called Aham Mama. This is illusion. One must give up this illusory concept and thus become fully aware of everything. So these verses here, Prahlad is asking them basically, you know, fix your consciousness on the spiritual nature of Atma, the self, the soul, and by doing that, you know, move on from this bodily concept of life, from which all the teachings you're getting from your teachers, all this materialistic teaching is based, even if it's religious or coming from the Vedas, it's all based upon the body. I want you to move on from that and accept a new body of teachings, a new goal, a new set of activities and religion based upon the soul, not the body. This is where he's heading. Those qualities in general, you know, there's no destruction. Now, Prabhupada mentions that as no birth and death. Vishnu Chakravarti gives an interesting statements from the you know, Vedas, which Prabhupada quotes in Sanskrit up the top there, that no inside and outside. You know, what happens when something becomes destroyed? You know, you destroy the body, basically, you know, the body merges with the external, and that, doesn't it? But there's no outside, no external. You know, when there's no difference between the soul, you can't say, oh, that's the inside of the soul and this is the outside, even if it has a bodily form. What's inside and outside, same thing. So therefore there can't be destruction. It can't, there's another part to that. But no decay, you know, we can say immutable. The Prabhupada says no dwindling. So, you know, you have the six changes, you know, birth, death, dwindling. So it doesn't dwindle. No decay. You know, it's pure. Pure means it's not attached to anything material, not detached, nor need to detach from anything material. It's already pure. It's the knower. We know in the Bhagavad Gita that the soul is described as the conscious knower of the field of activities, the body. The shelter. Now, of course, for the super soul, that would mean within him reside all the universes. You know, they can come out eternally, so many different universes. So is the shelter. The soul also accepts this quality of being the shelter. What is the soul the shelter of? Yeah, we can produce material bodies one after another. So, you know, we're the shelter of that. You know, for millions and millions of bodies, you know, will rest upon us as a soul. And that we can't produce universes, but so we have that same quality. You know, so in one sense, we're the original foundation of the shelter, as is the supervisor. Without change, you know, Vishwanath Chakravarti, the core, puts out, you know, without parts. You know, so as we've said, there's no inside, there's no outside, but there are no parts as well. It's all, you know, one spirit. So how do you change something, you know, that doesn't have changeable parts? And you know, the soul is also peaceful. You can't change its mood either. That's another way of vision. You know, it's always blissful. See? So there's no change there either. Self-illuminating. You know, so basically, you know, because we're conscious, we can understand ourselves, and we can know ourselves. The cause of the supreme cause. You know, the supreme Lord, of course, is the cause of all causes.
When after death, when the soul is free of the body, does it regret what it does? Is it like when you said we are conscious, but like in this conditioned body, we are not. There's so much condition that we are. So when you say that we are conscious, we are eliminated. So
we might
during that after death, do we feel bad for all the things that we have done?
Well, we might feel bad that we got caught doing the things we've done. We're about to be punished. But some don't necessarily, you know, have the consciousness. They may feel bad after they've been punished.
So
that's why you're going to punish them.
Because the subtle body being there is still
in
the conditioned state.
Yeah, they may not feel bad until they get punished.
And
they think, oh, you know, I won't do that again. You know, I've felt, you know, what I put someone through in the punishment, I felt that, so now I understand. So not necessarily they feel bad. All-pervading. So, again, the soul, of course, has unlimited knowledge and existence, and we know that the soul is all-pervading because, one, the soul is... the one soul, its consciousness is spread throughout the whole body. So we are all pervading. Our consciousness pervades the whole body. All pervading also is that the soul with a suitable body can exist anywhere in the universe, within fire, within water, like that. So that's also all pervading. Not influenced by matter. Now, of course, you know, the Supreme Lord does not associate. Vishnu just doesn't associate with matter. He's not influenced. He's not associated. Now, for the soul, Prabhupada mentions in the purport that the soul, because it is not influenced by matter, means it does not depend on the body, as stated there. And because it doesn't depend on the body, it's free to go to another body and transmigrate from one body to another. It's not like, you know, it has to, without that body, it's in any way deficient. It's not actually influenced. Not covered by anything. And of course, you know, similarly, actually the soul is, you know, not exactly covered, but we identify with the covering, you know, in that sense. You know, in terms of the Brahman, this material world is considered to be Brahman. It rests upon Brahman. And when this manifested Brahman, the material manifestation, merges with the unmanifested Brahman, what do you get? That's not a joke. What happens when the manifested Brahman merges with the unmanifested Brahman? What do you get? What happens when the manifested Brahman merges with the unmanifested Brahman? What do you get? You do, that's right. The unmanifested Brahman. It doesn't, you know, it's not that the manifested, the material energy moves into the unmanifested Brahman and then, you know, the unmanifested Brahman becomes covered. It's not covered. Even if it enters, you know, merges back within the unmanifested Brahman, the unmanifested Brahman still remains the unmanifested Brahman. It doesn't become covered. You know, sometimes when I do the purification for the homes and, you know, at the end I put a little bit of the burning coals in the wooden spoon. I walk around each room in the house and I notice that they're always fearful. They never want to go into the toilet or, you know, thinking somehow that the smoke is going to become contaminated because I've walked it into the toilet, you know what I mean? So I say, no, this remains pure. That becomes pure. So spirit remains pure and that which is impure just becomes purified. You know, what happens when what happens when the Papayoni, you know, the women, the sudras, and less than sudras chant Hare Krishna? Does it degrade the holy name? No. It remains completely spiritual. It doesn't become covered. So these are the qualities of spirit. Right. Right, so by knowing this, a person who's not necessarily on the platform of a person who's not a devotee, but they've heard some interesting things, you know, that oh, the soul has these qualities, I didn't know that, and the body, you know, doesn't have those qualities, and that's helpful. I can see the difference between the body and the soul. And as we see in Prahlad's preaching, and which is consistent with the Vedas, the stepping stone to understanding the super soul is to first understand that our own qualities. So we sample the super soul by sampling our own spiritual nature. So, you know, one debt that even though one may not be a devotee or doing devotional service, you know, they can, through transcendental knowledge, comes to the level of understanding the difference between the body and the soul. And if they do that, there's a beginning. So the super soul's like that as well. You're saying it's different. I don't really understand that, but I can appreciate what it means for that super soul to be a spiritual quality. So it is the beginning of the understanding of the super soul in one sense. And that's the example where Prabhupada is mentioning the drop of sea water compared to the... So it's a preaching technique. Prahlad Maharaj gives this example. He says, an expert geologist can understand where there is gold and by various processes can extract it from the gold ore. Similarly, a spiritually advanced person can understand how the spiritual particle exists within the body, and thus by cultivating spiritual knowledge, he can attain perfection in spiritual life. However, as one who is not expert cannot understand where there is gold, a foolish person who has not cultivated spiritual knowledge cannot understand how the spirit exists within the body. Very important verse. You imagine, let's take it back to what Prahlad is doing. Say Prahlad's discussing gold. And he's showing, he's in it. Pillard is not discussing spiritual life. He's teaching geology. So he's got some samples of some little gold dust. Oh, this is the quality. I have two things in my hand. That's earth and that's gold. And he's pointing out the differences like that. So then, you know, and so then the students understand, oh, you know, so this is good. So then, as he says here, the next thing is that, you know, if you can recognize where this little sample is, then you can understand that if you dig there, you'll come across the complete source. So, you know, so similarly, you know, we have the body. He's shown the difference between the body and the soul, and then he's saying that, you know, and you look and you see that those qualities of the soul are there. Now you need to fully extract that spiritual nature. So then the geologist, you know, will say to the, you know, the person says, yes, I want to invest, $2 million into the, you know, make a gold mine. So then, you know, then there's a process of extracting the gold you know, smelting it, whatever they call it, and, you know, separating it from the impurities and things like that. So the geologist also knows that. So similarly, at this point, the intelligence of an ordinary person who's not a devotee can perceive that, yes, I can perceive that there is something spiritual there. Now, I want to search for that and really, you know, fully tap into it. That they haven't done yet. But we are getting them to use their intelligence. They actually have to apply themselves. We're stimulating their intelligence to apply themselves. So gradually, of course, Prahlad will then say, so the process of doing that is the best process that's recommended is bhakti. There are other processes a bit roundabout, but Prahlad tells them straight out the best one is bhakti. So, and in this example, he says, here is a very good example concerning spiritual understanding. Spiritual understanding means using one's, you know, coming to spiritual, using one's intelligence to understand spiritual things. Foolish rascals, including so-called jnanis, philosophers and scientists, cannot understand the existence of the soul within the body because they are lacking in spiritual knowledge. The Vedas enjoin tad Viganatam Sagurun Iva Vigachet. To understand spiritual knowledge, one must approach a bona fide spiritual knowledge. Unless one has been trained in geology, one cannot detect gold. Similarly, unless one has been trained by a spiritual master, he cannot understand what is spirit and what is matter. So with the gold example, similarly, an expert spiritualist can understand where the soul is within matter. So by that understanding those qualities of the soul, we can perceive, oh, within my body there's a soul because, you know, those qualities are there. So within matter, within my body, within the body of other living entities, there is spirit. So this is the point where they're at then. So it's very step-by-step preaching, isn't it? You know, he's not just launching into, you know, a compass. They're not even, you know, a person who's got no concept that you're saying there's something living within inside me. Is it like an alien or something? You know, they've got no concept of spirit or matter, and we, you know, we launch too quickly into that discussion and jump into the super soul. We're not doing anyone any favours. Sounds like someone's really expert preaching so many slokas, and the person's just gone way above them. You know, just they said, did you catch any of that? You know, yeah, everything up to listen carefully. So, and if you see Prabhupada, this is, if you look at Prabhupada's conversations, and in Prabhupada's conversations, you know, if you listen to those lectures and it's in book form and that, wherever he went in the world, he got these so-called scientists and, you know, jnanis and professors and, you know, what have you to come, and he would preach to them about this. And if you look at how he preached, it was like that. First step only. And if he didn't make, he didn't move on until he actually, there was some breakthrough for them that he could perceive. They've accepted that, okay, all right, there's a soul within the body. Okay, then let's go further. If they're at the point now, there's nothing in that body, you know, if they're not going to accept that, then why go further? And now, of course, if someone doesn't accept there's a soul within the body, how much preaching would you do about accepting a spiritual master? And I've heard, you know, I've heard that. You know, you've got to accept a spiritual master, then you'll understand. Understand why? Something that doesn't exist. See? So now, this example of the geologist means that he's already defined the distinction between soul and matter. And then someone says, yes, I can see that there's something spiritual inside of me and other living entities. How do I tap into it? Oh, well, you know, just as you need a teacher who teaches you how to tap into the gold, they can see. We look at it and we see dirt and rock. And the geologists, they're trained, they say, there's gold. Oh, really? Yep, dig down. See? So the spiritual master is like that, but in the spiritual way, they can see, you know, there's a soul, and you do like that. So therefore, the next step, he's given them faith in accepting the spiritual master. He's asked them to have faith, now he's giving them faith. That, yes, this is not a bad proposition. So, you know, to understand such knowledge, spiritual knowledge, one must be trained in the mystic yoga system, or finally in the bhakti yoga system. Yeah, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhakti Mama Vijanati, unless one takes shelter of the bhakti yoga process, one cannot understand the existence of the soul within the body. So, therefore, Prabhupada says straight away that finally you must come to bhakti. Otherwise, if you don't come to bhakti, your understanding of the soul will be without an understanding of the super soul at best. Is that understanding the soul? No, because the soul has, there are two types of soul. One is unlimited one. So therefore you haven't understood. So Prabhupada says, the dogish conception should be rejected immediately. So Prabhupada, you know, this dogish conception, it's the bodily concept of life, but it's a stubbornness, a dogish stubbornness as well. One should be prepared to understand the spirit soul and the supreme spirit God, which are eternally related. Thus one may return home back to Godhead, having solved all the problems of life. Now, in the next verse, and of course, you know, so as you can see, although we're studying, in one sense, we don't always have to do verse by verse, but it's good in some chapters to follow the train of thought. If you give a class and you really see the train of thought, it's a lot better, because when you do that, you're more confident to say, you know, sometimes devotees, you know, they look at something and they say, well, there's not much in that, you know, there's not much in the next one. I think I'll do this one. You know, they've really We talk about spirits and Mars. I was reading about that the other day. What verse we're up to is what Krishna means we need to hear. And it's good to be able to give a class within the verse that you're given. And, you know, you can touch on it. This connects here and we go into there. But literally, that's what Prabhupada does. He gives classes. He doesn't go past. There's so much to speak about there. But you have to see it in context to do that. You know, I quite often see they'll actually do that verse, but they'll actually speak about another verse that they're confident with. So we're understanding the philosophy, we're also understanding preaching techniques. Then we hear the Lord's 8 separated material energies, the 3 modes of material nature, and the 16 transformations, the 11 senses and 5 gross elements like earth and water. Within all these, the one spirit soul exists as the observer. Therefore, all the great acharyas have concluded that the individual soul is conditioned by these material elements. So this is, we get to the next point. So here we've heard about the Lord's separated material energies, the 3 modes of material nature, and 16 other transformations. That adds up to that's 8 and 11, that's 19 and 16, 19 and 16. That's that's about. 35, but we only have 24 elements, right? So it's listing them in a different way. But we won't go into the technicalities, but basically the way they're listing it here is the 8 elements there, separated material elements, are actually Prakriti, Mahatattva, the Hankara, and the 5 subtle elements, the Tanmatras, you know, the form, taste, touch, sound, like that. So don't confuse them with... although Prabhupada quotes these 8 elements here in the Bhagavad Gita, when it says in the translation that the Lord's 8 separated material energies are that, it's sort of saying a different way. Actually, what it's referring to is the Prakriti, which is the total material energy, Mahatattva, in essence, was the total material intelligence, and Ahankara, which is the total, material ego, and then the 5, subtle elements. So then the 3 transformations would be Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas, and the 16 represents the 11 senses and the 5 gross elements. Now, the soul, of course, is the 25th and the 26th element, so that's spiritual, and the 26th element is the super soul. And the soul is conditioned. This is what this verse is pointing out, that here we have the 24 material elements. Then you have the soul, and the soul is conditioned by them. But then you have the super soul, who's a controller of the conditioning of the super soul. So this is the point we're coming to, the interrelationship between them. So we detected the spirit in the body, and the super soul may also be there. What are they doing? Well, one is conditioned, one is controlled. Next level of understanding. One who understands that will... what does that lead us to want to do? If one understands the distinction, oh, I'm a conditioned soul. The super soul can condition me, control me by the material energy, which I'm separate from, or can release me from that. What would you do?
Forget those conditions.
you'd surrender to the super soul.
Yeah, to
so at this point, you know, previously he's helped us to understand that we need to accept the spiritual master as a representative of the super soul, and now we're understanding, yes, we need to do that in order to surrender to the super soul, and we want to surrender to the super soul because I'm conditioned. I mean, this spirit is there, but I'm not free. I'm conditioned. The super soul's not. See, so all the components are gradually coming together. So, and as the intelligence is perceiving these components, it's actually bringing the soul to the point where they may take bhakti and have faith in surrendering. As soon as there's faith, Krishna says, Bhagavad Gita 18:66, at this point we're on the verge of it. The knowledge is there on the verge of it. That if I put my faith in intellectually, you know, or hypothetically, or, you know, what does Prabhupada says, if one accepts, you know, the statements of the Bhagavad Gita, even, what's that word? I think it's hypothetically. Okay, this may be correct. He says that person, a liberated person from the very beginning of their study. See? So an intelligent person, well, I can't see anything wrong with what's being said, and what he's saying, I do see the symptoms of, and that's leading me to think that, you know, I think I have faith in surrender, which is what Krishna said in the Gita. That is the beginning of bhakti, if they actually do that. So he's leading them to bhakti through their intelligence. Then if they take up that bhakti, then everything will be known. So in verse 23 we did. So basically this is leading to, you know, a search for the soul as being different from the body and the mind. Of course, the search for the super soul as being different and the control of the universe. Now, in verse 24, just in that purport there, in 23, Prabhupada says, one must analyze and understand his self. This is self-realization. Neti neti is the analytical process for rejecting matter. By expertly conducting such an analysis, one can understand where the soul is. So this neti neti, we know it's not bhakti, but it can help to get one to the threshold of bhakti. Text number 24, sober and expert person should search for the soul with minds purified through analytical study in terms of the soul's connection with and distinction from all things that undergo creation, maintenance and destruction. So one begins to, you know, look into what Prahlad Maharaj is giving our intelligence food for thought. We begin to, as Prabhupada puts it, really, you know, this is a way he implemented in his preaching. He says, when we analyze a body, we find a head, hands, leg, a belly, blood, bones, urine, stool, and so on. But after everything is considered, where is the existence of the soul? A sober man, however, avails himself to this Vedic injunction. Right? Thus, he can understand that the head, etc., and indeed the entire body, have grown on the basis of the soul. The soul is within the body. The heads, the hand, the legs grow, but otherwise they do not. Right? If the soul is within, they grow. Otherwise, they do not. So these are the sort of thoughts that come from it, and Prabhupada, and we help people when we're giving classes of that to get them to, you know, think in those terms. Neti neti. So in verse 25, intelligence can be perceived in three states of activities: wakefulness, dreeping. I think I'm dreeping. Wakefulness, dreaming, and deep sleep. The person who perceives these three is to be considered the original master, the ruler, the supreme personality of Godhead. Now we're following the. Imagine if he had just started with this in his preaching. Right, which some devotees do, to show how clever they are. Well, it's a real jump, isn't it, to this. Even after everything we've read, this is the next logical understanding, but, you really have to apply yourself. Where did that come from? So, what we see in the purport here is some very interesting things. We're first of all perceiving intelligence in its pure state and its contaminated state. Without intelligence, one cannot understand the direct activities of the senses, right, which means that what we do when we're awake, nor can he understand dreaming or the cessation of all gross and subtle activities, so what we do when we're asleep. The seer and controller is the supreme personality of Godhead, the supreme soul, by whose direction the individual soul can understand when he is awake, when he is sleeping, and when he is completely in trance. So we have something which is called intelligence, which allows us to know, oh, I've been asleep, I've been dreaming, I've been awake. That which allows us to do that is above the mind, which goes into those different states, and it's intelligence. Where did that come from? In the Bhagavad Gita 15:15, we see that's coming from the super soul, Krishna, from within the heart. It's supplied by the personality of Godhead, who accompanies the individual soul as a friend. So, and Prabhupada mentions in this purport a statement by Madhvacharya that the living entity is sometimes described as sattva buddhi when his intelligence acts directly to perceive pains and pleasures above activities. The activities of wakefulness, the activities of sleeping, the activities of dreaming. There is a dreaming state in which understanding comes from the supreme personality of Godhead. The supreme personality of Godhead, the super soul, is the supreme controller, and under his direction, the living entities are sub-controllers. One must understand the supreme person of Godhead with one's intelligence. We have discussed that earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, they are material elements. And the Supreme Person of Godhead is controlling those material elements. Our intelligence is a subtle material element. We're being controlled by it. The super soul is controlling that, we've already discussed. We can use our intelligence in different ways to achieve material goals. There are some things that where our material intelligence doesn't go. It is not possible to understand this. So we're going to need, you know, some more intelligence we don't have. If we get that, then it's being given to us. So therefore, you know, then the super soul. You know, one who is not controlled by sleep, wakefulness and dreaming, that person who is above those, one who's actually putting us under these states of, you know, they're controlling us to, you know, go into these states of sleep, dreaming, wakefulness. And they're giving us the intelligence to understand where, you know, we've been in those states. So we can link that the personality of Godhead, the super soul, can supply us a level of intelligence remove it from us. We gradually, this is what's perceived as we analyze our situation going through wakefulness, dreaming and sleeping, and our ability to know that we've been in those different states. And then our ability to, in one sense, intelligently function above those states. It shows us the connection with the super soul.
Is the soul connecting, controlling our dream, sleep, blissing, and then the super soul is controlling the soul? Or is the super soul directly controlling, because
it's
three states of consciousness?
Prabhupada is mentioning that, you know, someone is controlling our intelligence, and they restrict our intelligence so that we go into dreaming. And they restrict it more, we go into sleep. And then someone is supplying more intelligence and we come awake.
Which is it, our soul or super soul?
Well, if someone else is, can, you know, powerful enough, is the super soul. We're not, you know, we understand.
So for example, why am I asking this? Sometimes, like, okay, when I'm chanting, maybe I go off to sleep and I say, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
I say, I'm not doing this thing. So I can't blame it on the super soul. It is that my intelligence. No, so what? I don't feel there. It is a super soul.
Well, this, you,
like for example, when I'm chanting.
No, the super soul might want you to sit up and chant your rounds properly. Because Prabhupada is a representative of the super soul. He usually says, "Sit properly," and yet you're falling asleep. So what you're saying is correct. The super soul, we can't blame the super soul for us falling asleep while we're chanting. So I agree. Otherwise, Prabhupada, as a representative of the super soul, wouldn't say sit properly. Yeah. Sit properly means you're falling asleep. Sit up and chant properly. So what you're saying is correct. But let's put that aside for a second. What we can see is that someone controls our intelligence. So that basically, you know, our knowledge, our memory is connected with intelligence, knowledge, and ability to discriminate and all these different things. As it says here, I am seed in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge and forgetfulness. These are different factors, components, connect with our level of understanding of what's happening. Understanding, you know, what's happening to our intelligence. I have no understanding of anything. Why? I'm in a deep sleep. My understanding is gone. Who took it away? Who took my understanding away? When your understanding is gone, what does that mean? My knowledge is gone. Everything that I used to remember is gone. I've forgotten everything. So intelligence is gone. Then we get it back partially, dreaming, and then we get it back fully. So what we see there is someone is supplying and removing our intelligence. Now, that person must, and doing it to every living being, therefore the supreme controller. Right? So we can perceive, we've looked at the soul, now we can definitely distinguish that there is a supreme soul who has the ability to, but what we also see is if I have intelligence which is subject to, you know, sattva, rajas and tamas, so if I have impure intelligence, I must also have pure intelligence. Who gives me that pure intelligence? The super soul. Huh?
Isn't it our own karma that we are desires and all that is giving us? The subtle body is giving us. We can't blame the Lord for
that. Yeah, we may have, well, we're not blaming him, but he controls us for our benefit by giving us different degrees of forgetfulness in this life. Okay. So he is controlling that. We're not going to criticize him for it because he's doing it for our benefit. But he's also giving us instructions in the Bhagavad Gita how to rise above it by chanting, especially while we're awake. So we can't blame him for anything. But the main points we've got to fix upon here, that actually if we look at this sleeping, dreaming and wakefulness, it helps us to perceive our relationship with the super soul, and that the super soul is existing as an individual from every other living entity, doesn't it? Because one, that super soul is giving us intelligence and reducing our intelligence in the material state, but that means that we actually have a pure intelligence which is also, you know, can be given back to us as well, that, or taken away and put us in these material states. So therefore,
so answering these two, putting these two points together, we can say that we were not interested in chanting, and so the super soul allowed us to sleep. So we put it that way, that we were not taking it very seriously, and so the super soul, okay, say you do not want to take it seriously, okay, go to sleep. Can we put it that way? Because where is our component of our responsibility?
Well, the super soul gives instructions in the form of Srila Prabhupada in his books. So sit properly. And if we don't sit properly, we'll gradually slouch and fall asleep. So our problem is we're not following the parampara, which is where this chapter began. All right?
Mm.
So yes, it's our problem. Now, all right, and so let's keep on this. We've only got a little bit of time left, and we're sort of at a crucial stage of the philosophical understanding. So let's all stay awake. Sit properly. So as one can understand the presence of the air by the aromas it carries, so under the guidance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can understand the living soul by these three divisions of intelligence. These three divisions, however, are not the soul. They are constituted by the three modes and are born of activities. Right, so as I said, by understanding that, okay, sattva gives us this type of intelligence and rajas gives us that, just as the air carries the breeze of different flowers. But if we take, you know, so then the air in its pure state also exists. So my intelligence has picked up these different contaminations in the material world, but it still exists in its pure state. So therefore, these fragrances are not the air itself. The air has picked it up. These states of sleep, wakefulness, and forget and deep sleep, dreaming, that is not qualities of the soul. The soul is different from them. So we perceive again by this understanding we perceive two things: that the difference between the soul, its consciousness, and contaminated consciousness. So we're not now just looking at the difference between the soul and the body, we're looking at the difference between the soul and the subtle body, which is very hard to do. And we're also, in the same example, can perceive the difference between the soul and the subtle body and the soul and the super soul, which is also very hard to do because they're both conscious beings within the same heart. So three different levels of consciousness are there. We've got our contaminated consciousness, our pure consciousness, and the supreme consciousness are all within our heart. And these examples, if you study them, you can actually perceive the difference between all three. Like that. A very, very, very nice preaching. So, through polluted intelligence, one is subject to the modes of nature, and thus one is conditioned by material existence, like a dreaming state in which one falsely suffers material existence, which is due to ignorance, must be considered unwanted and temporary. So now that we've perceived that I am a pure spirit soul, I can now perceive the contaminated consciousness that I've picked up in this world, which is something like a dreaming state. And just as a normal person, like Nirmala, you're saying, you don't want to sleep or dream while you're chanting, then the same conclusion you should be thinking, I don't want to be a spirit soul who's dreaming of this material bodily existence. It's exactly the same thought. It's not natural to be, you know, chanting and thinking, you know, even you're eating a meal with some devotees and you fall asleep. You say, I don't want to do that. You're chanting, you fall asleep. Falling asleep, worshiping the deities. I, the devotee, you know, talk about a wake-up call. He was chanting in Mayapur when they were just building, and he was sitting on top of one of the brick walls, and he fell asleep. So, like, you know, as chanting, I mean, he commonly fell asleep when he chanted, and he fell off into a pile of bricks, like about, you know, so many metres down, never ever really properly recovered. You know, those injured just almost destroyed his, you know, like his faith and ability to practice Krishna consciousness. He gradually sort of went away from sleeping while he was chanting, you know. So very dangerous. But, you know, so we don't want to be sleeping or dreaming or in illusion when we're doing something that's really important to us. And then we realize, well, that's exactly what's happening to me. I'm a spirit soul and I'm dreaming this, you know, it's like a dream state. It's something which is a temporary thing put on me that doesn't need to be there. That's the realization. This whole bodily thing, that's a temporary thing, it's put on top of the pure consciousness of the soul, and I just don't need it. That's where we come to now. And so then Prahlad takes us to somewhere. Where are we? We've got 3 minutes. Let's just finish this little difficult section here. In verse 28, so there's two verses I want to do. Right? This one and the next one where basically the person must accept bhakti, right? Which conclude, and then we'll do the rest. So in this verse, verse 28, therefore, my dear friends, he's coming to the conclusion. O sons of demons, your duty is to take to Krishna consciousness, which can burn the seed of fruit of activities artificially created by the modes of material nature and stop the flow of the intelligence in wakefulness, dreaming, and deep sleep. In other words, when one takes to Krishna consciousness, his ignorance is immediately dissipated. Now, Srila Prabhupada tells us the best way to do that from the very beginning, engage in devotional service. You come to that platform, Bhagavad Gita 14:26. It burns to the root. And that's mukti. Mukti means giving up one's position in ignorance or illusion by one thinks, which one thinks in a way contrary to his constitutional position. Returning to one's constitutional position is called mukti. And the process by which one does this is called yoga. It's a very important statement. Thus, yoga is above karma, jnana, and sankhya. Indeed, yoga is the ultimate goal of life. Therefore, Krishna therefore advised Arjuna to become a yogi. Tasmat yogi bhavarjuna. That's, you know, that's from verse 646 in the Bhagavad Gita. But then again, Krishna says, be a yogi, but of all the yogis, be a bhakti yogi. That's the best. One who always thinks of Krishna within the core of his heart is the best yogi. By practicing these best of all yoga systems, one is liberated from material conditions. See? So when we talk of yoga, it is the process by which the soul returns to its constitutional position. And if someone practices karma, jnana, or sankhya, and they are deriving some benefits, but they're not deriving the benefit of the soul being returned to its constitutional position, especially ultimately in relationship to the Supreme Soul, then the yoga is aspect of the karma, the jnana, and the sankhya is not there. So Krishna is saying, be a yogi. Get back to your original transcendental position. So then verse 29, which is where we'll leave off today, he says, of all the different processes recommended for disentanglement from material life, the one person explained and accepted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead should be considered all perfect. That process is a performance of duties by which love for the Supreme Lord develops. And he talks in there about bhakti, like that. So let's just leave it there. And Prabhupada quotes some of the same verses, nice verses about bhakti as he has before. Let's just leave it there. So as you can see, Prahlad has brought them to the point where now, with their intelligence, they consider that, yes, I intelligently understand in a very reasonable way that I should take the bhakti and I should have faith in it. In fact, I will put my faith in it, and as soon as I do, they're then on the path of bhakti. Joy. All right, we'll see you next week, and we'll finish up this chapter here.